their chat. Cool, perfect. So hello, hi everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is our first in-person seminar, so it'll be a different experience for sure. Today we have Dr. Craig Ruspel, likes to go by Craig. He believes that improving our education by designing better ways to learn and teach so we can improve our thinking and doing is one of the most important things we can do, and that it's fun. He's an enthusiastic educator who enjoys exchanging ideas with other educators. He earned a PhD in curriculum and instruction from the University of Wisconsin. After degrees in chemistry, bachelor's and a master's, and history of science, a master's from the University of California, Irvine, University of Wisconsin, and the University of Washington. His PhD was developing a model for scientific methods and using it to analyze instruction. Later, he generalized it into a model for problem solving, for specifically science design and or general design that includes engineering, and developed a website about education for problem solving to explore ways of using this model and other models to help students improve their problem solving skills in all areas of life. One motivation for moving from Madison to Columbus, which was pretty recently, he moved in May, was his goal of networking with other educators and doing cooperative collaborations. Today's talk is titled Problem Solving Education to Help All Students Improve. Please give him a warm welcome, and Craig, we're ready for you whenever you are.
Let's go. Began with a beautiful picture up here, and it isn't advancing. Oh. It's not advancing.
Yeah, probably some.
It did earlier. Oh. Yay. All right. You notice the title is Two Colors. I'll explain why in a few minutes. Actually, two different things, building bridges and then figuring out for all students. I think you people are experts in trying to make it for all students, and I have some useful ideas about the other. I make some bold claims. One of them, well, why should we build bridges? What are the benefits? Transfers of learning. We can make transfers of learning between school life and non-school life that could be very motivating for students, especially K-12, where they have to be convinced that school is useful for their lives. And I think I have some ideas that might make that better. Also, transitions of attitudes through time, motivations that students can imagine that they will be able to use what they're learning now to make their lives better later. Very motivating. Okay, next few slides, I'm going to be talking about A and B. These are two reasons why I think we should expect transfer across areas, like between school and life, school life and non-school life. One of the claims is that problem-solving objectives include almost everything we do in life. That's A. Also, the way I define problem-solving process, it's similar for almost everything we do. Those two combined can be very powerful for transfer. And broad definitions, education, learning from life experiences, pretty standard. Problem, an opportunity to make something better. Any way, any area of life, pretty broad. Problem solving, anytime you do make something better, problem solving. Okay, that's one of the reasons why I claim everything. Objective can be product, activity, relationship, strategy, theory, the way I define it. Okay, I found that useful. These can be split into two things. Notice theory, that's science. You got theories about how the world works. All the rest of it is general design, including engineering and most other areas of life in different ways. Oh, something that all of you already know about multitasking, a tip, don't do it. In fact, don't try to do it because it's impossible. Multi really means shifting back and forth, and we lose a lot when we do that. So my recommendation during the seminar, listen. I overdid a lot of the PowerPoint slides, too much information per slide. Don't do that with PowerPoint. Therefore, it's going to be really good if you use this afterward for review. Lots of information. You can get an even more information if you look at the, it's kind of a catch-22. If you don't have the PowerPoint, you don't have the link. It's easy. Five words, education for problem solving. All one word, of course, .net, as in tennis. Five words. Also EED, Engineering Education Department. And if you look at either of those, you'll be able to find the link to, you'll be able to find it. Okay, lots of good information. Oh, the homepage for my huge website about education for problem solving. Tips, use a big screen, not a cell phone. Okay, if possible, open both pages. There are links at the top. If you open one page, it's an option, or two pages. And I recommend two pages if you got a big screen, big enough so you can see everything, because on the left, the links open on the right side. So the left remains open, and vice versa for the right, they open in the other. So it's a pretty good system. And that left side, introductory overview, that is a really good explanations of everything I'm gonna be talking about today, most of it. On the right side, examination of topics, click a link. Am I wandering too far? Okay. More about PowerPoint. This is one of the reasons I moved to Columbus. I thought it would be really good for education. I love education. I began PhD work in history of science. A fellow grad student began a sentence, "We historians, blah, blah, blah." I'm thinking, we? Am I a historian? I really like them, but I'm not one of them. I like them. We educators, yes, that's me. We includes me with educators, okay? This title, notice what's in blue, very top. Notice what's in purple. The blue could be independent without the purple, but I think the purple is for all students. We don't want to have some students catch on and say, wow, this is cool. And other students, boring, stupid. We want all students, and you people are the experts, I think, in helping us make it more better for diversity, equity, inclusion, reaching all students, regardless of backgrounds, all of those good things. Shared goals. I want to work with other people. So I would love to continue conversations with you after this. I don't want this to be the end. I wrote a whole section, and tonight, I'm going to make links in here. So if you look at it at noon tomorrow, it's going to be better, especially with links and also in some other ways. I think it would be good if we creatively, synergistically combine my experiences, understanding, skills. I'm really good at some things in life, not so good at others. You have your strengths and we combine them and it'll be better. Also, a lot of the things I'm talking about are, I've been thinking mainly about education for K-12, like motivation. When you get students that are already motivated, they made it into Ohio State, they're on their way, they're motivated, they want to be here, they want to be engineers, they want to have that a part of their life. Earlier, they got to be persuaded. And that's a lot of what my thing is about. But the ideas also can be useful for college education. And again, you are the experts on making this good for college, if you want. But I would be really happy if any of you do anything with K-12 in the area or out of the area. I'd be really interested in collaborating, cooperating, developing together. Okay, again, back to the A and B. Broad definitions, objectives include almost everything. I'm going to show you now why I think the second claim, we use problem-solving process for almost everything in life. I call it design process, but it's problem-solving process. Objectives and process, both for almost everything we do. Wide scope, very useful for motivating students. Why should you accept these claims? Because most things in life are problem solving, as I define, we have more flexibility in finding problem solving activities in areas that students will find to be fun, okay, and useful. Useful as defined by students. Okay, if we think they're useful teachers, that doesn't matter much to students. It's when they think it's useful. And personally useful in life, that is what we should go for, especially in K-12. Again, yeah. And I think my model is how we actually do problem solving. And I'll get to that in a minute. I really like other models. I'm not competing with other models. I think they're great in some ways. I think mine is great in other ways. Better if we combine them, okay? And that would be designing education. That's one of the things we'd have to do. Oh, this is a big deal. A really classic book, How People Learn, Brain, Mind, Experience, School. National Research Council commissioned a book. They said, we got a lot of really good research. We want to write it up in a way that will be practical for educators, teachers, curriculum designers. And they did it. Really good book. And I like what they say about transfer. Ultimate goal of learning, ultimate goal, major goal. How do you increase transfer? Teach knowledge in multiple contexts. Well, problem solving covers almost everything in life. Therefore, we can teach in multiple activities to give students experience problem solving in multiple contexts. Transfer helps. Okay. And using teaching knowledge in a form that's easy to generalize. Next, I'm going to be showing you why I think that is the case. Okay. How people learn, easy to generalize with the design process. Okay. All right. Here is a diagram that's a little bit more complex. Do you see the earlier diagram that was on the screen that you saw before we began? Triangle. Okay, up at the top, brain up at the top. You find an area of life that you'd like to improve something. You learn more about it, so you understand it more accurately and thoroughly with empathy, if it involves people, often does. I say define your objective, but really it's choose your objective. A really important step. There are zillions of things that we could do. Time is limited. Ben Franklin said, time is the stuff life is made of. Do not squander it. You want to make good choices. You can't do everything. Make wise choices. Alan Lacaille, How to Get Control of Your Time in Your Life. What's the best use of my time right now? Choose your objective. Okay, that's the goal up there. Define your goals. What do you want? If you solve this problem, what would it look like? What are the desired characteristics of your solution goals? Okay, then you generate ideas, you evaluate ideas in a cycle. Okay, the ideas in this case are options for solution. Okay, maybe this, maybe that, maybe not, maybe yes. How do you evaluate? Everything below here is how we evaluate. Okay, experiments are the key. I like broad definitions. I define experience, experiments as anything that produces experience. Okay, any situation that allows you to have an experience of observing or imagining, so you make prediction. Okay, those are the results of a mental experiment or physical experiment. Okay, really key. All of this is the result of doing experiments and using to get predictions and observations and then using them. Okay, how do you use them? Let's look at, well, later I have isolations. In fact, I think I will. Oh, here we go. Here's one isolation. Okay, this is the middle of the diagram. What do you do with predictions and observations? One thing you can do is you can compare them. That leads directly to the science questions. Am I surprised? If you're surprised by observations because you predicted one thing, you observe another, you're surprised. Then you ask why. Oops, something is wrong. It could be a theory about how the world works. So maybe you revise it, but maybe not. It could be you made bad predictions. Typically, we predict inductively by what happened before is going to happen again. What happened before in similar situations probably is going to happen again. Or you have a model, mental model of the experimental system, how it works, what's in it, how it works. And from that, you run the model mentally, you imagine what's going to happen, and you get a prediction. Okay, maybe something went wrong. Maybe you did not do that the way you thought it would work. Okay, or observations. Maybe your instruments are wrong. Maybe you were not paying attention when something happened. Your observations could be wrong. If possible, you do it again. Or the experiment. Maybe the experimental situation had other things in it. Okay. For example, in the mid-1800s, there was they predicted the motions of one of the planets wrong because the system contained other planets not yet discovered. So they figured out if there is a planet in this area of the sky, it would do, it would make the observations work. Pointed the telescope there, they found it. Okay, so that is a experimental system, was not what they expected. Okay, or that's for what I call science design. This one is another isolation. Simplify things a little bit. I think the complexity of the overall really makes sense once you get into it and understand it. But it's easier when you're starting out to do isolations. Another thing we can do is if you're designing something, product, activity, relationship, or a strategy, what do you want? What do you predict you're going to get if you use this option? If you evaluate this option, you imagine what will happen, and you say, is that what I want? Quality check. A predictions-based quality check. These are wrong, they're from an old slide, but predictions-based quality check. Or observations. You look at reality, you do the same thing. You observe what you actually have gotten. You compare that with what you want to get. Is there a good match? Okay. If there's not a good match, what do? Okay. Design cycle. You look at it and say, there's not a good match. If there is a good match, you say, well, maybe this is a solution. Good enough. You go with it. Okay. Oh, I forgot one. I'll go back to that in a minute. Okay. You ask, should I revise the option? You look at the mismatches. What is different between what you want and what you got? Could you revise the option, modify it, adjust, revise it to make a better match? In this way, your critical thinking and evaluation helps to stimulate and guide your creative generation. Okay. Typically, we think first you creatively generate, then second step, you critically evaluate. And that's what we've been doing down here. That's valid. But you can also do the reverse. Your evaluation based on the mismatches between what you have or what you imagine you're going to get and the goals. Can you revise to get a better match? Okay, so that's that. Then I've talked about all these. Okay. Oh, I'm going to go back to step three. Here we go. Okay. The original diagram, you got the stuff up on top. You first define a problem, you choose an objective, solve this problem, you generate ideas, you evaluate ideas. It's not over. You got to make a decision about one of the options. Choose an option, define that as your solution. Then you got to do actions needed to actualize it. You want to make it real, actualizing it. And then when it has been actualized, you have your solution. And hopefully it does make things better. Okay. Let's see, got about 10 minutes, a little bit more before. Do you have any questions now? Evidently, Benjamin, 40 minutes and then 20 minutes of open, roughly. Okay. I kind of ran out of time. If I did this over again, I wouldn't have to be backtracking, but it works. Oh, what I'm doing here works good for a seminar, limited time, very limited time. in a classroom, for example, a K-12 classroom, you would not do it that way. You don't dump ideas on students. What you do is you give them experiences, reflections, principles. You give them experiences and problem-solving activities. And then you ask them to do reflections. What did you do? How could we describe it? Have you done these things in life outside school? Have you done them previously in school? And then based on the reflections, students kind of figure out things, and gradually a teacher could build the models that I've been showing you, the pictures, diagrams, okay? A lot of self-discovering, more satisfying for students and effective. Basically, it's using a process of inquiry to teach principles for inquiry. Process of inquiry with student reflections, let them do some discovering of what they're doing, how it fits together. To teach principles for inquiry. Okay. Oh, I think inquiry, discovery learning often is used for teaching concepts, but I have mixed feelings about that. I think it's great for learning thinking skills. Should be used occasionally for teaching concepts, but I think generally direct teaching, direct explaining by a teacher or textbook is a really good way. I know a lot about chemistry. I'm good at it. I learn almost everything from textbooks, some teachers, but reading. Okay, it's a great way to learn, but for process, really is fundamentally different than discovery learning for ideas and better, very effective for principles. Listen. Oh, my bold claims. I'm not claiming that anything that I'm claiming is proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Instead, I think there are logical reasons for making the claims, for accepting the claims, as a good way to bet. Okay, good way to bet. And my claim is using design process, good way to bet, useful in educational projects, worth developing with investments of time and money. And I'm hoping that's going to happen in Columbus. Maybe you can be a part of it. Maybe we can help each other pursue things we think are fun and useful. And this, don't have time to go through this. You can look at this later. My PhD project, basically I developed a model for science, said scientists do these actions, then logic. If students do these actions during their instruction, probably they're going to learn to improve those actions. If they don't do those actions, they won't. That's not empirical, but it's logical. And it's similar for this, how people learn what I talked about earlier. Again, look at the slides later. What I recommend is during the seminar, listen. After the seminar, read. Although all the slides are too much information, basically I've skipped them. But it's going to be good if you read them afterwards. You can get a lot and read the webpage, my introductory overview on the homepage, lots of explanations. Let's see where we are. Oh, activities fun and useful. How is an activity fun? Okay, could be intrinsically fun. Okay, a topic is interesting. If problem solvings cover almost everything in life, we can find topics that are interesting for a lot of students. Any one topic may be not interesting for everybody. Some of them probably will be, but we try to get something at least during the school year that will be interesting. And actions. If the students are doing things that are interesting, exciting, challenging, that's fun. Okay. Or result of success. If they're anticipating success and they achieve success, that is fun. Okay. We want appropriate level of difficulty. Well-designed activities similar regarding difficulty. A good mystery story. Mystery story, you don't want to make it too easy or too difficult. You want it to be doable, but not easy. So people will figure it out and they'll feel good because it was a challenge. It wasn't given to them. Okay. If it's too easy, they get bored, too difficult, frustrated in between. So that's a design principle that every teacher, every curriculum design, it's nothing new, but it's something good to be reminded of. Useful is defined by a student. If they think something they're doing is useful, useful for their own life in their future. Could be near future after school that day is going to help them. Medium future next year when they graduate from fourth grade to fifth, from sophomore to junior. Okay, or as an adult. That is if they think what they're learning now will, well, let's look at the next. Okay, transfer across areas, I talked the A and the B, how people learn all of that. By contrast, transfers through time depends on how a student is thinking. Are they imagining the ways their present school learning will improve the quality of their future life living? Does present school learning make my life better in the future? That's motivating. Okay, there is one school program where they show students, if you make these decisions and do these things, your life is likely to turn out to be like this. If you want that, do these things. Okay, and that is kind of what this is. Proactive problem solving. Problem solving is you try to make things better. Okay. The student wants to make their life better. If they think better education will produce a better life, school life improves their whole life, including school life and non-school life. It's going to be motivating. Will making their education better make their life better? If a student is thinking yes, that's motivating for personal education. Education for me, because it's going to make my life better. That's a goal of all educators. I am just suggesting a way that maybe could be useful. Students' perception of personal usefulness, up at the top. If they perceive personal usefulness, it motivates personal education. Oh, here are some other things that, okay. Not my ideas, but ideas that I think every educator should growth mindset. For personal education, growth mindset. Often I look back at something I did and I think, oops, I didn't do that very well. But instead of thinking not ever, I'm just bad at doing that kind of thing. I'm going to continue being bad. They say, not yet. I have confidence that I can grow, improve in this area, this skill, if I invest intelligent effort in growth mindset. Okay, intentional learning. trying to learn from every experience. I used to be a really good tennis player, not Wimbledon, but good in SoCal high schools. Inner game of tennis, trying to learn from your experiences. That's the focus of that. Focus of all education, okay? Intentional learning, try to learn from every, intend to learn, okay? And this one, okay, performance objective, okay? If your goal is to perform really at your top, best performance possible now, you got a performance objective. If you want to learn, that is a learning objective. Two examples. Oh, the reason you want to learn now is so you can improve your best performing later. There's a reason. You're not doing it just to be doing it. You're doing it for me. Okay, an example, basketball. In an early season practice, learning objective. Okay, it could be that playing your best quality performance helps you learn, but it's not the goal. It's not the objective. Okay, but late season tournament game, you want to win, or at least play your best, perform at your highest level. Okay, so that's a, and there's a cute little diagram I spend a lot of time on, and learning now leads to performing later. I could say that in a few words, but I like diagrams, as you can tell. Oh, Maya Angelou, do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. That's great. My comments, okay? Do the best you can. You want high present performing until you know better. Then later, when you do know better, because you have learned in the past, present learning, it's now in the past, you can do better with high future performing. So that's, she doesn't need to be interpreted or commented on, but I did it. It is 4:40. Let me see if there, now I'll look at problem solving. Well, I already did that. Oh, one thing, I think I said this. I really like my model. Yeah, as somebody said once, Craig, you really like your ideas. Yes, I love them. I think people should be enthusiastic about what they, but I really like other models. One example is Design D School of Stanford. And this is gonna be the last thing and then we'll discuss. D School of Stanford Executive Director Jeremy Utley talks about why different models have structures that can be used for instruction and strategies that can be used for thinking. Okay, he describes structures of their model that's used to structure an experience of learning. For example, you're in a classroom. One of their things is, what happened? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I did something. Maybe it hit the end of the slide and said, you're over. Okay, it's big enough. Empathize. So when everybody in the classroom in groups or individually is thinking about empathy, a teacher can go around and talk with students. What do you think? How can you tell what these people are feeling and thinking? Okay, why should that make a difference to you? Why should it make a difference to them? Okay, classroom can really be focused on that. My model is sort of what we really do in creative thinking and critical thinking. Okay, sort of like atoms, you can get sequences of using your experiments to do evaluations, to do revisions and all of that. That's kind of like putting atoms together in the molecules. A lot of what other models do is they kind of make objects. Okay, so bigger scale. That's one of the reasons why my model and other models are not in competition, different levels doing different things. They do what they do really well. I think my model does other things really well. Use both together in ways that make the combination better than any of the individual models by itself. Okay. Went over 3 minutes. How do you do discussion?
We can just open the floor to questions.
Okay. You know people. There might be people in Zoom.
Yeah.
So if you want to be the moderator and
of course.
Ask questions, I will give responses, especially in the all students. I'm not an expert with answers. I will give responses, Q and R. Do it, Raphael.
Yeah.
Raphael was amazingly awesome in getting everything set up for me. So thank you, Raphael.
Of course. Yeah.
Good.
So if anyone is in Zoom, you can, speak up. I think you should be able to speak up or just send them through the chat. I guess I have not so much a question, more a comment. The model was interesting in that, I'm pretty new to the engineering education space, but to see a model that incorporates both action and internal thought processes in problem solving was pretty cool. Typically it's models are focused on one or the other. Either, just actions and participating in a community or pure cognitive, the internal thought process. So that was cool. Go ahead, Nia.
So I was wondering, I have to do a presentation on problem-based learning. And I was wondering if we were to use your model in a problem-based learning setting, how would you go about incorporating it, considering there's similar aspects of each?
Okay. I'm certain you know about PBL than I do. What do you think? Can people in Zoom hear? We can all hear you in the room where you're talking loud enough. Can they hear in Zoom what Nia is saying?
Can you? I can repeat the question really quick.
Nobody has said anything yet in the chat. Oh, yeah, I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, I can repeat the question. Neil was asking, how can the model be applied in a problem-based learning kind of framework?
Well, I was just thinking, because like Raphael was saying, a lot of these learning theories, especially that we're learning right now in our cohort, have to do with actions rather than, we're learning both the actions that you would do, but it's separate from the cognitive piece, right? So
yes.
I feel as though your model could incorporate some of those cognitive pieces, especially, for example, you have the reality check block in there.
Yes, and science.
Mm-hmm, right.
Am I surprised? Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so in problem-based learning, it's a lot of the student is responsible for their own learning. The teacher is simply just a facilitator, and they're not supposed to give information. But if students have this model to back up their questioning and the way that they're going about doing their problem-based learning, then I feel as though they would have a better foundation as far as the actions that they're doing in problem-based learning. That makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. I think Raphael's comments about the model, very perceptive, and and what you say also, you asked me a question that I think you are more expert on than I am, and your answer confirms that suspicion. So what you say, what we want to do is metacognition, okay? Thinking about thinking. In the right side page, I got this big section about metacognition, the right side that has sections with a lot of details. Really, really important. And what you're talking about is cognition and connecting actions, bigger scale molecules with the atom thinking. And of course, there you got quarks and maybe strings below, protons, electrons, and atoms. So yeah, so observing how there's a useful connection between your creative and critical thinking, and what you're doing is very useful for students to learn. And PBL, problem-based learning, can be a really good way to do that. And again, I think for learning process, excellent. And it's not in competition with what I'm suggesting. It's another variation on it that could be used together. Okay. Any follow-ups on PBL? All right, what else? Yes.
Go ahead, Tyler.
Two questions, if that's all. So the first one is, like, I saw in your bio that you were student at University of Wisconsin.
Yes.
Are you going to be watching the football game on Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah?
In fact, I've already cheered against the Badgers for the Buckeyes twice.
Oh, okay.
2019, when Columbus, Ohio State had risen to the top of my short list. I knew it would be more meaningful for them because they had a chance for the playoffs. Badgers did not because they lost Illinois. And I just emotionally wanted Buckeyes to win. 2 days from now, again, even more convincingly, I'll be against Wisconsin. So
now that I know your allegiance there, I feel comfortable.
Okay.
Moving
okay.
To the next question, because I know you're a smart man. And
hey, he's telling me how smart I am to cheer for the Buckeyes instead of Badgers. Okay.
So at the
Thank
very
you.
Beginning of the presentation, and you talked about how this your model can mesh with other models. And
yes.
Other models, and you know what your model really reminded me of is this sort of constructivist model where, you know, a student is building, you know, this theories in their head, right, and using empirical observations.
Okay, Sherry, people in Zoom are not hearing well.
They can hear. I speak yeah. really loud.
They
I always
can
make
hear.
Sure.
They can hear?
I confirm.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Sorry,
good.
This is not
you,
a short
you have a good
question.
System.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'll get to the point. I'm wondering where your model takes into account, like, the social aspect of schooling. And I'm wondering if, you know, because at the top you have where you're defining objectives, defining goals, a lot of times that's driven by things that are sort of outside this model, like identity. Like, do I identify as a student, right? And it, right off the bat, right? If I don't see any benefit in schooling, why am I going to define goals that are aligned with, you know, the goal of
yeah.
And then there's also this, you know, you have other students in the classroom, and oftentimes student behavior is dictated not by their own individual goals or objectives, but objectives and goals of others.
Very much peer support or worthy goals in life can have a huge impact. And a teacher, a school district, state, wants to make everything, including the peer constructivism, social constructivism, Vygotsky, proximal development, all that kind of stuff. It is independent, but cooperative. There's no tension between them. What I'm suggesting really, really could fit well with social constructivism, mutual influences on each other, all of that. And what we want to do is to make a classroom that encourages students to make good decisions about life and therefore, well, good decisions about school and life that are mutually interacting. So does that, you want to say more? It's really good. That's a really extremely important aspect of school life. It's not like they have life and then they have school. School is a big part of their life. That's why instead of, I do sometimes call it school and life because it's easy, but it's really school life, non-school life that makes whole life for the whole person, including all of the things that you're talking about. People care, students, everybody, but especially students in K-12 and high school, everybody is impacted by their friends, their, yeah, so.
No, I think that's a great answer, and I'd love to continue the discussion, but I see the floor to other questions.
Okay.
Also, I will say as a PhD student, I'm not sure there is a division between school and life for me. That's just a personal experience.
Yeah.
Kind of office hour from Thursday.
Yeah. Based on what I said, I agree. Lots of overlap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Non-school life and school life are very, yeah. Anybody want to comment continuation on that, or do you want to have a new? I'm still, do you think something like this, how do you think it would affect the goals of trying to achieve diversity? So students from a really wide range of backgrounds and abilities will be helped by this, instead of helping some a lot and others very little. Equity, what I just said, and inclusion. Do you have ideas? This is something we got 5 minutes left. We're not gonna solve it. This is obviously, as one of my two favorite history of science professors said, to be continued when we had a good conversation and we're gonna part ways, to be continued. So I'm hoping that will happen with people in engineering education. You're in this because you really love education. So we agree. Let's talk, discuss. Other, Benjamin.
Question. So regarding with your model, you do mention about this prediction and intervention. You have this sort of two streamline being aligned to a goal at the end.
Yeah. If you are in this kind of a situation, yes, you're trying to solve a problem. Okay, continue.
So my question is, like, if a person has a sort of this high tension, like, so they observe something, and that's completely, I mean, that's different from what they predict.
Yeah, you know, surprise.
Surprise. And one would have that tension, right? At least for me, I think I would have a tension.
Yeah.
As an educator, how do you help that sort of overcome your tension, that sort of frustration, and get them in sort of the mode of, like, help that,
well,
that tension?
Like cognitive dissonance, kind of.
Yeah,
you have a belief or an action and information from reality, observations,
right,
conflict with it, you got cognitive dissonance. And that's, there's all motivated reasoning in politics and tribalism. It is really a problem in the U.S. Where were you going with this?
So I
interrupted.
As an educator, how do you help that person overcome or reduce
okay.
attention? How do you help them?
I would say you got two different, you got cognitive, mm-hmm. Conceptual change. Peter Husen from Wisconsin when I was there. Conceptual change, how do you get people to change from their scientific misconception to the scientific, that's kind of persuasion, cognitive, and then you have emotional. Do you want to put the hammer down and say, you are wrong, face it. You think this, but you're wrong. Observations of the real world show you're wrong. That hammer could be emotionally damaging to a student. And that's, I mean, a teacher tries to have empathy, to be kind, understanding, empathy. And sometimes it can be difficult, especially when you got like 25 students. So why don't you say a little bit more about, and it's 4:58. So does that kind of, it's a challenge.
Right, yeah.
Everything you brought up is really, really educationally useful, insightful. But yeah, that's a tough one. Cognitive dissonance is.
Yep. Time for probably one more.
One more. One you more. Choose.
Ooh, does anyone have one?
I don't want.
I kind of have one. So for the same class that Nia is giving a presentation tomorrow, I'm presenting on connectivism, which is more situated in the context of the information age. Earlier in the presentation, you mentioned that the teacher should be presenting the principles and the students.
Well, presenting,
or
explaining. Well, eventually explaining. I would like to eventually come up with this, okay, but not immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I'm not familiar with connectivism, so.
Yeah, connectivism is really just in a sentence or so, it's looking at how learning happens when there's a large amount of information easily accessible by students.
Internet.
And the internet,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So my question was focused more on the role of the educator. How do you, more just on your thoughts, it doesn't have to be related to your model, but more on your thoughts in how the role of the educator is changing as information is readily available for students.
Okay, I got a really good answer this time. Observations are not just what you do in the future. It's not that you make the scientific method. First, you have a hypothesis, prediction, then you do the experiment, like Poe, predict, observe, explain, really great K-12 sort of thing. Observations can be what you remember from the past, your personal experience firsthand, what you observed secondhand somebody else has done, had happen, or it can be something totally different. Okay, you can pull it from your personal memory, firsthand or second, and you can pull it from our collective memory, from Wikipedia, from web searches, from any way you can get information, lots available, okay? So observations of reality include not just what you do in the future after a prediction, it can happen before a prediction. In fact, in most areas of life, you don't come into it totally naive with no knowledge. I mean, you're interested in this area. Obviously, you think there's something that could be improved. You know a lot about it already. You have observations you did or you learn about from our collective memory. And well, yeah, so I think that's an answer.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Well, that makes sense.
Where were you going to go with this? What's your?
Well, under in the connectivism literature, they say that oftentimes the instructor becomes more of a facilitator in the classroom because so much more learning can take place outside of the classroom because information is easily accessible.
You can guide students
exactly.
Guide on the side, sage on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
and all of you, and yeah, guide on the side, facilitate.
Sweet. Yep, definitely. Fantastic. Well, that's time, everyone. Thank you. Round of applause for Terry. And thanks to everyone that joined us virtually as well. And I'll stop sharing now. Thank you. Stop.